Daring to dream of a better world for all of us. CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives.
You've tuned in to Truth Before Reconciliation with your host, Tammy Wolf, where we're building relationships and teaching truth before reconciliation.
Hi, you've tuned into CKUW 95.9 FM here in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I'm Tammy Wolf, the host of Truth Before Reconciliation. I have Nicole Forbes here with me today. She is my friend who's a Métis writer and speaker. And we're actually going to have a really great conversation today about the recent CBC story that questioned Dr. Carrie Bourassa's indigeneity. So I thought maybe you could start just by introducing yourself, Nicole. Welcome. Thanks so much for being here with us.
Thanks for having me, Tammy. I'm looking forward to the conversation. I'm a writer and speaker. I'm also working on my master's degree myself. And as a Métis person, I spend a lot of time reading, researching, and feeling what identity means.
Right. For sure. And definitely, moving right into the conversation about Dr. Carrie Bourassa and, you know, your own identity as a Métis person. How did you feel with the uncovering, the unveiling of yet another non-Indigenous person claiming to be Indigenous?
Well, I read the article and the whole time I'm scrolling through it, I'm going, what the heck? And there was disbelief, but there also wasn't. You know, because this happens too much. There are way too many people in literary circles or academia or just trying to get noticed. I don't know how else to put it, that assume an indigenous identity that isn't true and doesn't belong to them. And when that happens, there's this huge trickle-down effect of harm that happens in the communities of those where the pretenders have sort of chosen as their spot, you know?
Right. And infiltrated themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in this case, she earned her degree. She's smart, educated, worked hard for it. She didn't have to assume identity that doesn't belong to her. She could have still done good works without saying that she was Métis or Anishinaabe or identities that she had taken on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of being a good ally and a good friend to these communities, she has robbed them. Right. And she's stolen identities that don't belong to her. And now we have people like you who have cited her work and are now dealing with the grief and disappointment and second guessing.
Sure.
There are other people who have championed her and held her up and looked at her as an example who are also feeling let down. And then the next thing that happens is the second guessing when other Indigenous people start to rise in professions. There's questions and there's distrust and they're second guessing your own self and your own right to be there.
Right. I honestly can't mirror those statements anymore. I myself, I cited her work to see a scholar to that level. You know, she has a doctorate. A lot of the work that she's done focused on Indigenous people, and I did cite some of her work, and for me as an Indigenous woman, as an Innu as well, I feel hurt. I feel, you know, disheartened. I feel like that was somebody that I had looked up to as an Indigenous person, as a mentor, as somebody. I mean, I don't personally know her, but I know of her work within the academic sphere. And so to see somebody to that level, I would look up to that person and say, oh, well, you know, I aspire to be like that person. And to sit and claim and hurt the community in that way is just, it's damaging. It's damaging on a multi-level.
It is. And what I found specifically infuriating in this case, and it happens very frequently, is that when questions began to be raised, instead of telling the truth and using different language to explain her connection to Indigenous culture, she doubled down And she, nope, this is true for me. And so the statement that she released were talked about how she was adopted by her grandfather's friend, and that's where her connection with Métis people. Well, just say that in the first place. Be honest about your connection. You don't have to say you're Métis. You can say you identify with that culture. You've been adopted by them. You have affinity for them. There's connection there. There's 1,000 ways you can say that without assuming an identity that doesn't belong to you.
I feel like just as you're talking too about that, it's your explanation of that is just embodying Indigenous truths. That it's in itself is embodying one of the seven teachings. What something that I always say is lead with the truth. Leading with the truth will never steer you wrong. It will, you can never go wrong. Yes, sometimes the truth is hurtful, as we're seeing. That's what we talk about here on Truth Before Reconciliation. But leading with the truth will always take you down a right path. She could have, you know, just completely sidestepped this. You know, she could have exactly what you said, been in alignment of doing the same work that she's doing, and good work too, as a non-Indigenous ally, as many people have done or are continuing to do in today's, you know, academic sphere, and or not in the academic sphere, all over the place, right? And it just makes no sense to me why claiming something that is not your own.
You know, hello, our lands invaded, our livelihood taken, or like, that's a Western way, is if you see something that may benefit you, then you take it. And, you know, be damned to whoever it does damage to. Right. And it's hard to see that continuing to happen.
Right.
In areas where there's actual real progress being made. So when you look at academia and you start seeing that there's, you know, space and the Indigenous voice is rising and there's credibility given to, you know, our way of knowing and our oral traditions and our traditional knowledge and ceremony, right. All these things are space given. And then you get a pretender stand up and take up so much oxygen in that realm that didn't need to be. You know, she could have done all of these good things in her community without taking this identity as her own.
Right. And I mean, I guess mentioning too, like you mentioned, you know, the Western way of, I mean, I guess divide and conquer really is what happened, right? When we're talking about the impacts of colonization, that's exactly what happened, is when they saw something that they wanted, they took it. And so really looking at how, you know, this non-Indigenous person felt entitled to take something that didn't belong to her is just, I mean, I want to say it's ironic, but it's shameful.
It's disgusting. And
it's completely shameful. Mm-hmm.
It is. And what it does then is there's so many Indigenous people who have lived disrupted lives because of systematic racism and the targeted destruction of our family units, that there is a natural fear and insecurity and second guessing of our own Indigenous truth that we're meant to be living in our bodies and in our communities. So then you get someone pretending, stepping in, and, you know, all this gets blown up. We end up having an innate panic attack going, oh, you know, am I really who I say I am? Is this really going to happen? Or is someone going to come for me? It's ridiculous. But because of the disruption and trauma that our bodies know and our families have experienced and our culture is still scarred from, this is a further harm that is done. Outside of the realm of, you know, the people who have supported her, and don't even get me started about grants that were given and all that stuff, you know, like there's.
Well, I mean, we can kind of sometimes see, I guess, that might be like the answers to why, like, why does this happen often, right? Because as I mentioned earlier, this is not the first time. And you said, you know, this actually happens significantly now. We're finding out more people. So, I mean, a couple of shout outs, like the Trickster series that was on CBC. So Eden Robinson wrote that book. Can't remember the name offhand who that producer was, but she was found to have, you know, non-Indigenous lineage. And she did the same thing. She doubled down and said, this is who I am, and released a statement and said, no, I am who I claim to be. But the Indigenous community has already turned their back, right? Because why would you need to lie about who you are, right? And then also another good example would be Joseph Boyden. And that's still under question, right? Is that, I think maybe he has, but he does have some sort of lineage, but the community is not
complicated.
Right.
And so as a Métis person, it really like irritates the crap out of me that so many pretenders just say they're Métis.
Right.
Because it's,
our identity you don't mean is so politicized.
Right, and our identity is so politicized anyway, and it's a mess within our own communities how to sort it out. And it's hard as a Red River Métis, where I believe Manitoba has done the best that they can to put some guidelines in place and boundaries and look at genealogy authentically.
Right.
And, you know, our St. Boniface Geological Society has done a really good job of trying to track this and make corrections and stay on top of this Métis thing. But outside of our borders, it's a little bit of a free-for-all. And so it's easy to come in and say, oh yeah, I'm Métis, and this fringe group of people who also say they're Métis are validating my experience. Well, there's got to be some parameters, because what we have is, oh, what's that quote my kids always use from the superhero movie? If everyone's super, then nobody is. It sort of feels like that's our identity. If everyone's Métis, like, we can all just be, because we all have some Cherokee princess in our background. That's not enough. And that's not, it robs us of the authenticity of who we are and what our experience is. Because being Indigenous isn't just wearing pretty earrings and having deadly auntie jokes. It's
although I like to do both.
that's a benefit, but that's not the whole experience. Our whole experience is a lot deeper and harder.
Yes.
And when you have people pretend to be something that they're not, it minimizes the struggle that actual people have walked through and lived through. And that's not okay either.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, like, all jokes aside, that's also Indigenous humor, right? So, I mean, for anybody who cares, Savage Rose, shout out. I just got my new earrings
Those
in the mail
gorgeous.
Today. Thank you. But, you know, I love the auntie jokes and I do that. But I mean, it's downplaying the actual systematic issues that I've faced, the negative impacts of colonialism that I've experienced. You know, I talk a lot of the things about, you know, the child welfare system, you know, issues within education, the justice system, homelessness, poverty, gangs, addictions, all of those things I have personal lived experience with. And to sit and see people who are non-Indigenous, and it's almost like they want all of the benefits and the rights. Like earlier we talked a little bit about, you know, the money that, you know, potentially she was getting grants or she was getting Indigenous research for, which is a huge boom right now. But really it's like you want all the I want to say perks, but you haven't really experienced any of the hurt. And I mean, not that I want people to experience that. It's just, it's almost like you're not Indigenous. So it's okay to be Native because people say it's okay to be Native. That's almost where the conversation is headed, right? Like,
what's a cool thing right now?
Right.
It's
sad.
And, you know, my identity is not a trend and neither is yours.
Right.
And yet that's what it's being made out to be.
Right.
And what, again, frustrates me is that you have people taking up space and oxygen in conversations and literal physical space in areas that Indigenous people can't even get into. Like, you know, I know of a ton of non-Indigenous people who go to culture camps, and yet we've got hundreds of kids in our inner city here who have no idea what their culture is because they have no access to it.
Right.
But it's become a trendy thing to send your kids to a culture camp so they can go for a smudge and a sweat. That's not a tourist thing. That's part of our identity, and it's being stripped away so that white people are having access to it, but our own children are not. And this issue with this professor is just one more branch on that tree of co-opting Indigenous identity and our right to know ourselves.
And that is really where it boils down to, right? Is that the people who should be in these spheres, in these circles, in these academic spaces are not, because there's other people who are taking up that space and shouldn't be. So it's almost as if these, and you see lots of these research projects happening, and you see all of these new things. Exactly what you said is like that. It's almost as if it's the cool, it's the in thing to be. 10 years ago, people weren't talking about truth and reconciliation, right? You know, I've been doing what I do for many, many years. I talk about that a lot, about how, you know, I'm personally impacted. So I've been talking about it before it was the cool thing, before it was the hip thing, before everybody was on it. I was talking about it, and for the most part, lots of people didn't listen, right? Because it didn't impact them and it wasn't the cool thing. And as we've seen in previous years, you know, that Indigenous people, it's been a negative cycle. So, I mean, it's nice to see that things are coming out. But I mean, to see people taking full advantage of that in negative ways is almost more hurtful. It's intentional. It's strategic.
This wasn't an accident. This was a series of intentional decisions that she's made. What she could have done is she could have used her influence, her education, her position to bring Indigenous academics along with her and elevate their voices and include them in the process and empower them to do things. And man, wouldn't that be amazing if our allies would empower us rather than steal from us.
Right. And I mean, really, I guess moving more so towards like reconciliation, that's what reconciliation is about. How do you feel that this is tied to that truth telling and ongoing process of reconciliation that we should all be working towards?
I might be one of the suckers in the world that really does believe in reconciliation and a path forward into a better way of relationship. And I think that happens when we all stay in our own lane and when we give respect to those who are walking a parallel path or a different path, and we elevate the voices of people with a lived experience. Mm-hmm. If I have an interest in, you know, seeing kids who are vulnerable to gang recruitment have alternatives, that's not my lived experience, but I know someone who's it is. And so I put my support behind him and elevate his voice and empower him and get him. If I have access to funding, then I will help him have access to that funding so that he can go into those fears and talk about his lived experience and work at my experience is different. And so I can believe in something and support it without taking it over. And I think that's where reconciliation happens, is that if you're a white person and you believe that there needs to be change, then you empower the good work that's already happening. You partner with and be in relationship with people. You don't steamroll them and steal from them and consume a community and an identity that's not your own. You have, like, as non-Indigenous people, it is super important that you build meaningful relationship and you work out of that rather than assuming that you know better and know all.
Right. Well, I mean, there's so many things with that. Like you talked about building relationships is what we do here, teaching truth before reconciliation and building relationships, but also about how, you know, bringing those people into these conversations. And that's why I do this show, right, is bringing people like you in to bring that voice. So, I mean, really, I guess that's a suggestion for the listeners out there, for them to come in and have those conversations and build those Indigenous voices up. Would you say that would be your suggestion?
Absolutely. I think that there are a lot of good Indigenous people saying a lot of meaningful and helpful and necessary things.
Right.
If their voice is not being amplified, then you figure out how to help them get amplified. You don't say what they're saying and claim it as your own. You amplify their own authentic voice. And that's where healing happens and where we start to see a mutual respect grow. Because until you can authentically support the lived experience and the voices of Indigenous people without co-opting their culture, we're not going to go anywhere.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, just to reiterate, I mean, like, just don't do it. Like, why would anybody want to appropriate Indigenous culture as their own when you're not? I just, Yeah, it boggles the mind. But I mean, I think you have some really good suggestions, right? It's like coming together. And I mean, that's what we talk about here. We talk about building relationships. And that's really, I feel like, the path forward, right? This is the unveiling, what's happening right now. This is the truth part, that we're still in the truth part, is when we're seeing stories like this come to light. This is the unveiling. So people are really getting to see the truth of what's happening and what has happened in the past and what's still happening with Indigenous people. But really, to move forward with reconciliation, we have to continue to amplify Indigenous people's voices.
The truth is hard to hear. It's uncomfortable and it hurts, right? But you just have to sit in it and let all of those emotions come and recognize it for what it is. And then you move forward. You can't skip the truth part.
For sure. Definitely. I'm so glad you came in to talk to us today, Nicole. I'm so happy. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. So I hope you guys enjoyed today's show. This is Tammy Wolf with Nicole Forbes here on Truth Before Reconciliation. I hope you guys enjoyed today's show, and please do come back next week. You're still listening to CKUW 95.9 FM here in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Bye-bye, guys.
Thank you.